Hi there, Megan Thompson here with Megan Thompson Coaching. And today we are going to discuss whether or not play therapy helps highly sensitive children end their cycle of daily meltdowns. Let's get started. Hello, and welcome to How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. I'm your host, Megan Thompson, licensed clinical professional counselor and registered play therapist supervisor. We at MTC teach parents how to eliminate the daily meltdown and shutdown cycle for your sensitive children and teens. Highly sensitive children make up 15 to 20% of the population, according to research that has been gathered for over a century. And this podcast answers one question: how can you raise emotionally intelligent children, stop walking on eggshells, and help your child express their needs safely without punishments, yelling, or coddling? If you want to know the answer, you're in the right place. Here at MTC, we help parents of highly sensitive children break out of the meltdown cycle in as little as 8 weeks. What do we mean by that? I mean that we are helping families stop the hitting, kicking, screaming, yelling, throwing things, running away to the room, hiding under the bed, and all of this emotional intensity, and stopping that daily cycle in 2 months for many of our clients. And when we think about what that sounds like, what that means, we're talking about giving parents the capacity and the skill set to stop the cycle, feel confident that the skills that you're learning are changing the dynamic in your household, and that those skills will last. And so when we think about what that transformation requires, it is important to understand what you might feel capable of as a parent and where you might be stuck if your child is having these daily meltdowns. Now, when your child is struggling at this level, it is obviously going to be very exhausting for you, and you will feel frustrated and overwhelmed and at times wiped out and even potentially resentful. Which obviously makes you feel ashamed, because what parent wants to resent their own kid? And these are your darker moments, right? I know that you're working very hard to create the best life for your child that you can, and also for the rest of your other children and for your whole family if there's more than two of you in the household, right? And so where you often might get stuck is in finding a process or a more foundational system to support your child so that you know what skill to use when and how to set clear boundaries without invalidating your child, and how to help your child notice their own emotional intensity without leaving them to themselves to handle it all, right? And that balance between being passive or protecting them from their own experiences all the way to the other end in that pressure cycle of my way or the highway, or suck it up, and all of this. And so when you're swinging on your own pendulum between those two emotional experiences, that reactivity yourself, and your child is doing the same, I can't do it versus I have to do it exactly my way, this cycle really impacts the entire family, right? And that's where the exhaustion comes into play. And so when you're looking for help, I want to speak about the angles that you might have tried or are considering trying. And today we're going to discuss specifically play therapy, and even more specifically child-centered play therapy in this dynamic, because this is much more common if you are seeking support from a play therapist. It is likely that play therapist will apply child-centered play therapy at least to start. And potentially, this could be their theoretical orientation. So I want to give a little bit of background in that. First, we got to talk my expertise a bit in case this is the first time that you're hearing from me, the first show that you're plugging into. Welcome. Hello. I have been working in this mental health field as a registered play therapist supervisor for many years. And the last year and a half, left my practice altogether, almost 2 years now, left my practice altogether. It was a group practice helping parents of highly sensitive kids break out of the meltdown cycle through the avenue of the medical model of therapy, which means I had to tweak it, and was simultaneously running this coaching consulting company to work with families internationally. And now this is all we do here at MTC. I no longer have the group practice in serving this modality, applying that modality to
solving the meltdown cycle because it took longer, even when I was the one serving versus my clinicians serving a family, it still took much longer to stop the cycle in the household. And because that modality is less efficient, it's also important to understand how I needed to actually change the model itself to make an impact at all. And since I don't teach our process to other professionals because of the watered down effect, it is important to understand a little bit more about what you might be applying if you're seeking mental health therapy, child-centered play therapy for your sensitive kiddo who is having regular, intense, explosive, or implosive behaviors. And I want to talk about this specifically related to child-centered play therapy, okay? So certainly, obviously, I have the training. I've kept my credentials up. I stay close to the field in that and learning more about the research and understanding more about this. It is important for me to make sure that my clients know that when they work with me or my team, that we are using the latest and greatest evidence-based approaches and teaching this directly and training parents directly, and also helping our clients stay focused rather than having this scattershot, you know, fad psychology or pop psychology approach that is common when you're trying to do this yourself, right? So our process, we follow a formulaic approach while also specifying per family so that parents who come work with us learn particularly how to apply exactly what we teach to their unique family, because obviously every family is unique. You are a unique person. We teach our clients to build their critical thinking skills, to understand more about how your child ticks, how your specific child ticks, what frameworks to understand your child in that. And then also obviously how to get the kid to brush his teeth. Right. Now, often where you might get stuck is if you try to focus first on that, how to get my kid just to survive the day to day, brush teeth, go to bed, all that, then you're missing the underlying cause of why your child is freaking out in the first place. Right. So we simultaneously teach both of those skill sets in order to build and foster and empower parents in solving this problem. And this is why I don't recommend child-centered play therapy to stop the meltdown cycle. And I want to speak about this from a theoretical standpoint, right? If a child-centered play therapist is doing child-centered play therapy the right way, they are either a registered play therapist or a registered play therapist supervisor. They have the letters RPT after their name, or RPT-S, which is mine, or they are under the direct supervision of an RPT. Now, this is important because if your child needs mental health therapy for symptoms of a mental health issue that are not pertaining to the root cause of the meltdown cycle, then absolutely, play therapy is a great treatment for mental illness. Now, or if your child is not highly sensitive, then I don't know why you're following me. Or if you're wondering about your other children, then fine, great, go ahead and seek support in that respect, right? We're speaking about the particular needs for a highly sensitive kid who is having daily meltdowns. So this is a specialty within a specialty we're talking about. And I really want to make sure that if this is the first time that you've heard of me and you haven't binged my content yet, then, you know, let's bring you up to speed, okay? So child-centered play therapy, first and foremost, the words are, you know, indicative of the approach. It means that the child is the one who is going to be worked with the play therapist themselves. And again, going back to understanding that play therapy is not just playing with a kid. It is a clinical technical skill that is a postmaster's skill set that requires thousands of hours to obtain the RPT stipulation and the credential after your name, thousands of direct client hours, as well as hundreds of training hours. All right. So, and the majority of those training hours that are required have to be face-to-face going in to work with a direct trainer. So you can't go read a bunch of books as a professional and then take a test and get the letters after your name. Like some other kinds of fields, like, you know, if you're getting your PMP or, even an MBA can be obtained entirely online. An RPT cannot be obtained through an online process where you're not working directly face-to-face in a building, seeking supervision, and having years for this. Okay, so think about the specialty being more akin to a medical specialty. If you are in medicine and you're at post-residency getting getting your specialty in a specific type of surgery and doing this type of technique in a surgery, okay? That's what we're talking about in terms of post-master's, post-licensure credential of RPTS, right? Another equivalent, and I'll stop, is if a teacher then becomes a reading specialist, right? Okay, all right. Wanted to just make sure that we were all talking about the same thing, because the field of play therapy is enticing. It can also be very, very watered down. And so when I'm talking about hiring a play therapist, I'm talking about doing the real thing, and still it's yet insufficient for this problem. Okay, so let's talk about why. Now, when we're getting into this dynamic, the important first part of this is to understand child-centered play therapy as a modality, right? As an approach. Play is the child's language. Toys are their words. Something that you've likely heard me say a bazillion times again. And it's also true that for child-centered play therapy, this is a spin-off of person-centered adult therapy, right? So the principle, the core principle of this type of therapy. And again, I used to run a teaching clinic. So we've trained, used to train all of my clinicians in this. I can give you the bare bones, what we would talk to our interns about, is that the person-centered therapy approach is that the person knows what the person, the client, wants to address and how to quote unquote heal thyself. Okay. So it stems from Carl Rogers' person-centered therapy. Rogerian therapy in adults has its sister approach for children, and stems more primarily from Virginia Axline and then Gary Landreth, another grandfather in the field. And the child can solve their own emotional, create their own emotional healing from this approach. All right, this type of modality, which means that there's a therapeutic playroom with curated toys specific for certain emotional conversations that a child is going to have through the toys. And in that playroom, the therapeutic playroom, there are certain toys that are not included, very much so. One of the big things, big no-nos in child-centered play therapy is structured games. So any sort of board game would not be included in a child-centered play therapy, at a play therapist's office or playroom, all right? So any structured games, any sort of toys that have like light up focus, any sort of structured expectation for the toy. So we would be thinking more along the lines of Montessori type toys to kind of give you a little bit more of a bird's eye view into the approach. So toys that can be manipulated and offered, that can offer multiple uses, right? Now, I'm not saying everything's going to be made out of wood and faceless and all that. Many play therapist office, and my clinics included, had, items that you know, baby dolls with faces and things like that. So they weren't like totally impressionistic, if you will, or interpretive. And it's also true that there are specific toys that we just didn't include, to include board games, for example, okay? So fidgets, same thing. Like things that had basically distractionary purposes, we weren't including those in the play therapy office. Those might have been used for a teenager who needed something to manage their own nerves while they were having a conversation with a therapist, but that wasn't what we used in our play therapy office, all right? Offices. So now that we have an understanding, there are certain toys curated, right? when you are looking into this approach to solve the problem for your family, if you've already tried to use this approach, I want to explain a little bit more about why it hasn't been working so that you're not falling into the trap of characterizing your child as the problem. The approach is the problem in this dynamic. There's not something extra specially wrong with your kid if child-centered play therapy hasn't helped your highly sensitive child stop having regular, intense, explosive, or implosive behaviors. So going back to the child-centered play therapy, the main effect of the approach is that the child will solve the problem from their internal psyche, from their internal soul response, their own mind, to work out whatever it is. Okay, so in some layman's approach would be that the child would be telling the story through their toys, the play therapist would be reflecting this back to them, and then helping the child change themselves through that insight. So at the bare bones level, it's validation, right? You are heard, seen, understood, I care about you, and you matter. And that construct is the basic foundational level of what we teach our clients, because it is not enough. It's the same mentality of the gentle parenting that doesn't work for general approach. It works just fine for non-highly sensitive kids, right? It's just not sufficient, which is this, you matter. Of course, our children matter. Unconditional love is necessary for parenting. And you know, we do the very best we can to be unconditionally loving to our children. It's not sufficient and structured enough to set boundaries when your child is losing their mind, hurting themselves, or about to hurt other people, or hurting other people, including you, right? So that mentality of we have the space, do what you will, creates for sensitive children and a lack of scaffolding or structuring. It creates more anxiety and overwhelm. And so that means that it takes a lot longer for the child to actually shift in this dynamic, and they end up exploding in the playroom. Whether that explosion is actual physical aggression is neither here nor there. They are either going to explode by dumping toys and just creating this big, overwhelmed, what we would call in the clinical world, flooded playroom, or they would implode, which means they are going to be very regimented and in fact likely talk more than play. An anxious child talks. A relaxed child plays. And so when we're discussing and focusing all of this, and this is like core paramount grandfather of child-centered play therapy, modern grandfather of child-centered play therapy, Gary Landreth type stuff here. And that mentality is just in the research from Landreth started his research in the 80s, I believe, and started publishing in the 80s or 90s. And Virginia Axline started her publishing. She studied under Anne Freud, who's Sigmund Freud's daughter, who had the training, and she took Freud's training and applied it to children. So Virginia Axline published in the 1960s, one of the historical manuals of play therapy. All right. So paramount shifters in the field, and the majority of Gary Landreth's research for his child-centered play therapy, he did use research to purport change. However, he studied traumatized children. He was working in, they're based out of Texas, providing services for low-income families, low socioeconomic status families with very chaotic traumatic environments. And so child-centered play therapy acts as the one and only, oftentimes, for these families who are in such emotional turmoil themselves and, you know, generations of trauma, one and only steady adult relationship for these children, because these children were coming to for free therapy and potentially moving houses, which meant they were moving schools, they were going to shift schools. And so these children were worked with in Landreth's clinic, and his clinic's still operating. And this is throughout the country, and is how I got the beginning of my training was working outside of DC for the underserved population and solving the emotional intensity through child-centered play therapy. It works very, very well. Takes a long time, but it works very, very well for traumatized children, because as the therapist, you are taught, as the play therapist, you are taught, and this is, you know, through supervision taught, as well as through all of the research to back it up, you are the steady adult in this child's life. You are predictable. You will set tones and expectations. It's not a free-for-all. They can't destroy the toys, right? But there are very few limits in the child-centered play therapy office for the therapist to impart with the child and only to use when necessary, which means that the child, if they are not pushing boundaries or they're not experimenting on boundaries, that means that they are not fully being their true self in that therapy office. It feels difficult for them to build that relationship. Then they will not test the boundaries. It's normal for a child to test boundaries within reason. And when a parent who is communicating effectively and setting effective boundaries back, the child is responsive to that and the child moves on. So developmentally speaking, through different parts of a child's life, a healthy child who is not experiencing traumatic experiences at home, they are likely to occasionally test boundaries. And when I say test, this isn't a manipulative presumption. I want to just kind of give that a caveat. They're looking both ways and figuring out what to do. And they're looking back to their parent. Is this safe? Can you help me stay safe? That's the communication. They're not testing to see sneakily what they can get away with. That's not how I view children. And that's not how children actually learn. And it's not the core assumption that I make of children. They're learning, they're figuring it out. And it's our job as adults to help our children communicate effectively and safely. And we have to assume that they are trying the very best that they can. They're learning to do better and that they are at a core level just effective at this, at their very skill level that they have. So we're not going to make assumptions that your child is manipulative or maniacal or oppositional or defiant on purpose or any of that baloney presumption, because that will keep you stuck, right? We have to show unconditional love, which means we're not going to use judgment in our communication with our children, all right? And I'm speaking specifically with all of my training, but also in how I treat my own children. So the dynamic here that's critical to make sure that I'm finishing my thought as I go into these stories here is that as a child-centered play therapist, the child is expected to solve their own problems, right? So again, going back to Rogerian approach, being influenced by Carl Rogers around the same time, Carl Rogers was speaking about adult therapy in that respect, and showing unconditional positive regard allowed the adult to solve their own problems, basically allowed them to quote unquote talk it out. And that took a year, 2 years as an adult who is insightful being demonstrated insight back to them, reflecting insight back to them, and they figured it out, right? So that mentality is pervasive in the child-centered play therapy approach. And one of the reasons why I actually felt sparked to address this here with you today and get more pointed, because you've heard, you know, probably heard me talk about how individual therapy is not appropriate for solving this problem, is that I happened to see a quote of a child play therapist or a child therapist mentor who is teaching play therapy to young up-and-coming or well-established therapists. And she supervises, she has podcasts, all this stuff. I'm not going to name whom that is because she's very well-respected in the field. And for that purpose, it is effective, all right? So I'm not here to speak poorly about a person's character, a person's expertise. She has great expertise. She teaches a lot of great stuff. And when applying this method and this modality to parenting a sensitive kid, you will get stuck. So that's why I'm not going to show the receipt of who it was, but I will quote what she said. And one of the things that she said was, the only thing you need to know about a child before entering the playroom with them is their name. As a parent whose kiddo is hitting, kicking, screaming, yelling, throwing things, you know, and you're grasping at straws, throwing things at the wall to see what sticks, it is likely something that you value that when you are hiring a professional to help you with your child, you are then receiving feedback and that professional is using the background that you're giving them in the relationship with the child to help the child shift their behavior. And there has to be a balance there. We can't stay in extremes that the child will heal themselves and solve this problem, especially for highly sensitive kids. You can't raise a highly sensitive kid in an extreme in any sense of the word because they struggle with rigidity. They have to learn how to live in the gray of the world. There is no black and white. It is all gray. It is all subjective. And in most often points, right? Why? You might say, well, Megan, it's not subjective. Hitting is not okay. Hitting is okay if they are engaging in self-defense and you want your child to hit back if they are, you know, potentially being abducted or getting smacked around in an unsafe situation where somebody with somebody who's bigger than them. You want them to hit back, right? So yeah, it's gray. We don't stay in black or white. We don't want to dull our children's spirits. We don't want to make them feel as if they have to be frozen in unsafe situations. Now, I also don't want my kid, and I'm sure you're the same, responding to their brother as if their brother is an aggressor, right? And responding to you as if you are a bear and feeling so unsafe that they're hitting you, right? Their fight, flight, freeze response is triggered. We also don't want the flop response triggered either, where your child is just basically playing dead and learned helplessness, right? I can't, I won't, and that looping for them, right? And so when we're looking at this, we want to be teaching our children the skill sets to feel safe in their own bodies and to respond in safe ways, right? So that means that when you drop your kid off for an hour a week and they're working on whatever they feel like is necessary to work on, you are left with the other 167 hours of the week managing your child's behavior, hoping that this professional is helping your child learn how to make safe decisions in an effective, developmentally appropriate way, right? And through how they're teaching or through how they're influencing your child towards change. And one would presume you would be able to gain skills, okay? So when I was doing all of this, when I first got started in this field, I was working with parents whose lives were emotionally and physically and situationally very chaotic. They were traumatized, all right? They didn't know when their next meal was coming from. They didn't know if their job was going to be kept. They didn't know when their next job was coming around. They were living paycheck to paycheck, doing the very best that they could. And so I was doing the very best that I could, helping them learn skills at their own pace with their skill set, with their circumstances, without requiring them or stretching them to go above and beyond when they were already just in survival mode naturally, right? So the term within which how change had to happen was very long, right? Years working with these families and creating change, right? Again, going back to parenting a non-sensitive kid who has experienced significant trauma, or a sensitive child who had experienced significant trauma, addressing this emotional intensity through child-centered play therapy. I eventually sought out training and received training by some big name trauma expert, whom, again, not the time or place to really focus on that right now. But my expertise working right outside of DC, I was blessed with some wonderful, phenomenal opportunities early on in my career, and then was able to continue that myself because I value high quality training and working with people who actually know what they're talking about rather than just talking basic principles, right? And so in that respect, it is important to notice that this mentality, that whole, you know, the only thing you need to know about your kid, about the kid that's coming into your office is what to call them, is just preposterous when we're applying this to children who are not experiencing trauma, who have not been traumatized, especially not chronically traumatized. Say, for example, they lost their house in a house fire or a flood or something like that. Sure, giving them space to eventually talk about that or work that out in their play is definitely necessary because, you know, a child might need to be ready. But it's if they're having daily meltdowns, we still need to create that opportunity for them to shift out of that and feel safe in their own bodies. That needs to be much more pointed than just waiting for them to figure it out. And as a mom, I feel so passionate about this because if my child was having these needs that were not developmentally appropriate and I needed professional support, I would want to know from that professional what the heck I was doing that was keeping this happening, and also to feel empowered on how to change this, right? And so if you're having that desire is very valid, very valid. And one thing that I've noticed over the course of the field is that when professionals are applying the principles that work fantastically with traumatized youth to children who are not traumatized, they are actually disempowering parents. And this is that mentality that I busted out of years ago because I realized that I was actually disempowering parents. And this wasn't what I wanted, right? Like your child doesn't, you don't own your kid, but your child belongs in your family. You care for them, right? You are their sole responsible person. And as a result, we need to impart knowledge to you as fast as humanly possible, rather than just being the gatekeeper and seeing if I'm the one that needs to, as a professional, have, you know, hold the keys to the kingdom, right? That's not how this works. That's not how this works, because that disempowered state as a parent conveys lack of certainty, conveys lack of confidence, which means your child won't believe in you, which means your child won't follow through, because when you say the words that you read in a book, you don't know that you're saying them to set a limit in a disempowered state. And so therefore your child can't trust you. Do you see how this keeps the cycle going, right? And the professionals are none the wiser because they're using effective approach for the wrong population. And so once I noticed that years ago, I started to do things differently. And so the theoretical context of a child-centered play therapist is critical for you as a parent to educate yourself in order to understand why I'm so passionate about how this approach actually keeps you stuck and is not effective for your child's very specific needs and for your very specific needs as a parent. Now, secondarily, it's also not research-backed in terms of understanding the temperament trait that your child has. Your child is highly sensitive. That means that they change through you, not anybody else. Certainly not through themselves. All right, so child-centered play therapy wholeheartedly purports that the child is the therapeutic change agent for themselves. All right? That goes directly against hundreds of research studies that demonstrates that a highly sensitive child is actually going to be malleable and plastic to their environment. And so they will only learn the skills that are necessary for them to survive in that environment. And so if your child is having a survival response to you, that means that they are learning that they need to survive you. And I say this with love, but I am not going to sugarcoat this. If your skill set is only so big that you eventually get reactive and you end up being scary, whether that's scary is because you're yelling or that's scary because you're not structured enough for your child and they feel like they have to handle themselves, which is a different type of emotional neglect than the emotional intensity, your child has that response, maybe not often, okay? I know you're trying the very best you can, and I'm not here to judge you, but I will for sure tell you the truth. You can absolutely expect that of me, and I will not sugarcoat it. So again, I'm here to be blunt and honest because you deserve it, and nobody else is telling you this stuff. So here's the deal. Let's be clear. As soon as you know and we shine a light on the problem, then you can certainly take that light and hone in on it and improve your process, right? Otherwise, you're just imparting your knowledge to someone else, disempowering yourself, telling yourself that you can't learn this stuff, and then you have to outsource it. And what happens is that just ends up solving the problem in a much slower capacity because you have to figure out how to get your own support because you constantly feel inadequate. And so then you're dividing the problem into multiple sections, right? You end up going to your own therapy. And this is just what we saw. We ended up referring that the parents out who said, you know what, I just can't stop yelling at my kid. And we're like, okay, well, this is you know, adding problems to the problem. So let's go get you your own therapist. And that was the approach before I designed my own process. And then once I designed my own process, and that was the only thing we did at my group practice that I ran for many years, we required parents to attend these teaching workshops and then also work directly with us to learn how to be the therapeutic change agent in their home. Again, going back to timeline, we used evidence-based treatment. We used the structured filial play therapy. We did not use child-centered play therapy to solve this problem with parents of highly sensitive kids and their highly sensitive child as the identified client, which, you know, for the medical model, you have to pick somebody. And it's just a constraint of the approach. All right. So in that dynamic, parents needed this approach, and we did it. We did what we could, and that it took longer. Now, Gary Landreth himself, you know, I dropped his name in that respect. He's one of the grandfathers of child-centered play therapy. Gary Landreth himself says specifically, both in his live trainings, which I've received, as well as in his remote trainings and his published works and his training DVDs. I've consumed it all at this point. In his work, he says specifically, and so does his counterpart who designed CPRT with him, an evidence-based research focused research-backed training. I just said evidence-based and research-backed, those are the same thing. to create this, to shift the parent-child relationship. So it's called child-parent relationship therapy or training, excuse me. He speaks specifically related to the fact that child-centered play therapy is not sufficient when the child is engaging in risky, life-threatening behaviors. So he worked with traumatized youth, again, in his practice, and when the child was engaging in behaviors to include hurting themselves or hurting others, he did not provide child-centered play therapy. That stuff is like hidden in a tiny little pocket of either one of his books or his trainings or whatever. It's not focused on. It's not a focus of his work. It is something that he taught. And I quickly picked up on that because we were seeing this and working with traumatized youth, right? And yet he would engage in these debates with prescriptive play therapists because he wholeheartedly focuses on the fact that the child can heal themselves. And with his framework and with his approach, it works, it takes forever, okay? However, the prescriptive approach for sensitive kids also takes quite a long time if you're just working directly with the child because of this understanding of androgen sensitivity. Now, if you want more information about that, I did a training a few weeks ago and published it related to the fact that on whether or not the temperament trait is genetic, what to solve for if your child's having daily meltdowns or intense emotional intensity on a daily basis, whether externally or internally, and what the research speaks about. And I did a deep dive on that research about an hour long a couple weeks ago. Let us know if you want that. We're happy to send it over to you. You can go find it on any of my platforms. And right now we're going to talk about, just shook my camera over here. We're going to talk about the fact that even grandfathers in the field talk about how child-centered play therapy is not structured enough for children engaging in explosive behaviors. Okay, boom, done, right? I'm not saying anything controversial in the field unless someone is a baby in the field and hasn't learned that yet. So I'm not saying a baby in the field like you're, maybe I should say, what's the better word? that's like something you say when you're in your profession. Oh, they're just learning, right? They're green. Okay. That's a better word. Maybe still pejorative, but maybe a little bit better, right? Less experienced. All right. Sue me. Don't sue me. Don't kill me here. Right. I used the wrong word. In that respect, what we're talking about is really understanding that if somebody is not as learned in the field, does not have the near 15 years of experience working with this approach and staying on the up and up in the research, they will tell you, yeah, this is going to be a great approach, right? And yet, people who have been talking about this and teaching on it and multiple, like hundreds of studies at this point, my guess would be that Gary Landreth has published and Sue Breton, his counterpart, especially related to using CPRT in all kinds of settings, and tweaking it and seeing how far they can shrink it. And in fact, their CPRT, their child-centered focus teaching this filial therapy directly to parents, they've actually used that modality and removed the child from the equation altogether and seen the same results. And they've even used this modality with teachers and given the skill set to teachers and seen a result. Why? Because when a child feels completely out of control in their body, you don't give the skill set directly to the child only. The child is a child, right? I know I've got a 7.5-year-old and a 1.5-year-old at the time of this recording, and I'm not going to let my kid handle her own sense of safety. Neither of them, right? Toddler almost dumped herself into the bathtub the other day, face first, right? And we have a body of water in our home, and you turn 2 seconds, and the kiddo is going to drown, right? I'm not letting go of my toddler. But we had friends over the other day, and 2 seconds later, you had to pull the 4-year-old up, right? And I watched my 7 and 8-year-olds as like a hawk in this dynamic. Why? Because children don't have full skill sets to keep themselves alive. As adults, we don't always do the right thing to keep ourselves alive, right? Sometimes we engage in risky behaviors ourselves. And so why are we buying into this belief that parents can't learn these skills, that you as a parent can't be the full imparter of emotional safety for your child if you had a different skill set? Listen, I know you've been trying to teach yourself all of these things. And if you could have figured it out without professional support, you would have figured it out by now. You're very smart. It's also true that you do not need a second master's degree to parent your kid. And so let's focus on what actually does work. And I will keep this a little shorter than because I've already been talking for about 40 minutes. So I want to highlight this. You can definitely go into our free masterclass and learn more about our process, and go to our results page on the website, learn all about the families that we've helped and we've served. But today is the day. Today is the day for us to talk about what it is that needs to shift. The first thing first is you need to understand how you're making it worse. And part of that is by giving your power away to a professional. And today's day and age, there are many influences in the parenting and educational realm that are teaching parents that you don't know what you're talking about, and even taking away your basic rights to impart guidance and knowledge on with your children, and stripping you from your understanding of what your child might need because of a trauma-informed approach. Now, if you're not directly traumatizing your child, which, by the way, if we look at statistics, odds are you're not doing that intentionally. And even if you were reactionary and yelling, which does create a trauma response in the child's brain, you are working actively to stop that. And if you had skills to stop it altogether, you would use them. I believe that about you. I know that you believe that about you too. However, if you're following professionals who are like, leave it to me, you don't really have the capacity. What? I'll help your kid, right? What does that do? It destroys the family unit. It reduces the efficacy of the very collaboration that you're seeking to have, right? And then what happens is when the child-centered play therapist works with your kid forever and it doesn't actually change, what do they start asking? Are you sure your kid doesn't have any trauma? Are you sure your kid hasn't been mistreated? Are you sure? Maybe we just should focus on, medication now, because, or get a psych eval. See if there's anything deeper wrong with your kid. Meanwhile, the very obvious petri dish that your kiddo is being raised in is not being addressed specifically. They're telling you, don't yell at your kid, invalidate. And that should do it. Bare bones, basic structure. Guys, in our approach, we teach that in week one. In week one, we give parents those skills. And for many of our clients, they come in the door and they're like, yeah, I've been validating forever. It doesn't work. And then we teach our process of validation and they're like, oh, I haven't been validating well. Why? Because a book doesn't talk back. A book doesn't talk back. Book doesn't watch you validate and then realize, hey, your delivery is off. Or, hey, what you're doing is actually reassuring your kid, which is ineffective and moving into fix-it mode. Right? Or the sentence you say after validation is invalidating in fact. And so therefore, you're counterproductively impacting your kid, right? Again, books don't talk back. Podcasts don't talk back. Hi, I have one. Happy to talk to you directly. Myself or my team, we are available to have a one-on-one conversation with you about where you're stuck, whether or not our process will work for you. And if that is the case, we are happy to walk you through the five shifts that we know work specifically for solving this problem. All right. Number one is definitely getting out of your own way. Number two, recognizing you are not your child's safe space if they're having daily meltdowns, being capable and open and honest on focusing on resiliency playfully to change the family culture and to totally and completely transform how you and your spouse or co-parent are relating to each other so that you're no longer undermining each other or disempowering yourselves based on your assumptions, and setting safe and effective limits for your child because they need them. They need those limits. They need those boundaries. They need to learn swiftly and playfully that what they're doing isn't safe so that they can feel capable. We have to foster curiosity for change for your child. And obviously, our approach is that you need to invest in mentoring. At this stage, when your child is struggling this much, it also means you're struggling this much and you need support. All right. And I am not going to debase you by thinking that living in survival mode and trying to solve this by DIYing it is going to fix this problem. I get it. When I invested in my first coaching at the first stage in 2011. Yeah, that's the date. And I've been working with a coach ever since. It was humbling. It was also logistically, I had to get creative in terms of fitting this into my schedule. However, as soon as I saw outside my own box that I was actually perpetuating this problem by my very thinking patterns, mind-blowing transformation was available to me. And then consistently and over again, I've been investing over the years over $1 million in my own education, for my team and all of this. And that's post-masters, right? At both in my personal development and in serving my team's development and creating the opportunities for staying on the up and up with the research and all of that. And critical for that, right? So if I can do that, you can do what it takes to solve this problem swiftly for your family. And because I'm no special unicorn person, I'm still human. I still put my pants on one leg at a time. I still have to sleep, right? And enjoy ice cream a little bit too much. All right. So again, if you can enjoy life to the fullest and focus on it in every other avenue, and you're stuck in this one, then it's time to work directly with somebody who can help you do that. And we are happy to figure out whether or not what you're doing is keeping you stuck, and also whether or not our approach can help you reach your family's goals, because not every family has goals that we can help reach, all right, or perspectives that work well with our process, because it's intense, it's swift, and it really is transformational, and not everybody's ready for that kind of approach in a short amount of time. So it is critical that we vet every single family whom we invite in, and only work with families whom we know that we can solve this problem with. So phone call is necessary, all right, to really understand and how we would curate our process for your particularly unique family. And because we don't take a cookie cutter approach here. All right. Happy to talk to you about all of that. And we will speak to you soon and talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. We release a brand new episode every week, so be sure to click subscribe. If you like what you've heard and you're interested in seeing if you're a fit to work with us at MTC, here's what I want you to do next. Head on over to meganthompsoncoaching.com/call and book an appointment with our team. We'll get on the phone for about 60 minutes and we'll get you clarity on where you're stuck in parenting your sensitive child or teen, what your goals are for supporting your child's development. And if we can help you, we'll get you started on knowing exactly what to do to eliminate that meltdown cycle. Eliminating the daily meltdown cycle does not happen by itself. You need expert guidance to make it happen. And we've helped hundreds of clients from all over the world end that cycle in as little as 8 weeks. So to see if we can help you do the same, head on over to meganthompsoncoaching.com/call. I'm Megan Thompson, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.